need you here on my mind every hour of the day. Without your sweet inspiration,
everybody, it's another Tuesday night. It's 7 p.m. on the left coast. It's time for the Tammy Jackson Show on the 405 Media. This is Tammy Jackson, as usual, welcoming you to an hour of sweet conservative inspiration. If you'd care to do so, go ahead and interact with comments and questions and or questions on Twitter during the show. Follow me at Tammy J, T-A-M-I-J. My first guest tonight is a regular who stepped in when my scheduled guest, Andy Puzder, had a family emergency. Andy had to cancel all appearances for the week. And so I thought, okay, who can I get? Who knows his stuff backwards and forwards and the latest of whatever's going on? None other than my friend Timothy Shea. If you don't know him, that just means you haven't listened to the show very much, because Timothy Shea has been on a number of times. He's a good friend and a regular guest. He has been active in GOP politics in the Northeast for over 40 years. He's in blue territory, a red person in blue territory, just like I am in the Northwest. He served as a town meeting member, town GOP committee member, et cetera, et cetera. He was the host of Radio Red Nation Rising. He's a political commentator, essayist, pundit extraordinaire. Timothy Shea, thanks for making time to be on the show.
Tammy, it's my pleasure. Great to be back on with you.
Of course.
And well, let me just hasten to add that, like your great state of Oregon, most of New York State is red. If people look at the county-by-county results of the 2016 election, President Trump won all of New York State except for downstate and the cities upstate. But my Madison County went for Trump. Most of the counties up here did, except for, you know, Albany, Syracuse, Rochester, Buffalo, Ithaca, and a couple up in the far Northeast. But New York State, most of the Northeast, actually, is significantly red. It's just that we get outnumbered by the big cities.
Yeah, that's the way it's going now. We've got a nation where the cities are pretty much inhabited and densely inhabited by progressives, a.k.a. socialists, and they overwhelm the voting boxes. And so this is how it's going right now, unfortunately, especially on the coasts. So, Timothy, we wanted to talk just a little bit about something that is, it's pretty heinous, but it's not on the caliber of our second topic. But we want to get this out of the way because we know people are thinking about it. And that's the White House correspondents' dinner that occurred Saturday night. I know you watched it, or you watched the recording of it. I watched the recording of the speeches, or whatever you want to call them. They were heinous. Michelle Wolf had to say was absolutely abhorrent.
You know, Tammy, I'd never heard of her before, and now I know why.
Exactly. I heard the name, and I thought, huh? And she started out, and her first minute was tremendously unfunny, and that was maybe the best minute of the whole, whatever, 18 or so minutes that she spoke. And not only was it not funny, Timothy, if people haven't watched it, you may not want to assault yourself with it, but you may want to hear it just to know what we're talking about. But her language was abhorrent. Her topic was abhorrent. She beat up incessantly on Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who was two seats away from her. She beat up on Kellyanne Conway, one of the sweetest women on the planet. And she tried to make a joke about abortion, and she made fun of Vice President Mike Pence because he is pro-life. And she said, he thinks abortion is murder. And actually, that imitation I did wasn't as bad as her real voice.
Her voice is 10 times worse than that. It's even worse. You know, she said, don't knock it until you tried it. And once you try it, really knock it. You got to get that baby out of there. It was the sickest, most disgusting display of hatred I've ever seen. And Tammy, it goes far beyond Michelle Wolf. OK, pleased to meet Rob Schneider when he was at the peak of his success on Saturday Night Live. His cousin was a year behind me in school in Boston. And Rob came up for the weekend, and he was hanging out with us one Friday after classes. And I really got to know the real guy beyond the characters he portrayed on Saturday Night Live. And he is not only funny, but he's incredibly smart. He's a really bright guy. And so I was very pleased when he came out this week, and his take on Alec Baldwin's impersonation of Donald Trump is exactly the same as mine. That it's not funny because it doesn't come from a place of love. It comes from a place of hatred. Dana Carvey's Bush was great because it came from a place of love. Ditto Daryl Hammond's Bill Clinton.
Yes.
I love Jimmy Fallon's impersonation of Trump. And that skit with he sitting opposite Trump, supposedly at a makeup table, and they've got a just a wooden frame, a mirror, and they were mirroring each other. And then at one point, you know... real Trump got his hair mussed up by Fallon Trump, and it was just a brilliant, really funny, endearing portrayal. And I think Daryl Hammond's portrayal of Donald Trump is extremely funny. You can poke fun at somebody, you can caricature someone, but to attack them with vitriol and hatred, Alec Baldwin isn't funny. This Michelle Wolf wasn't funny. Even the joke she made about Anderson Cooper wasn't funny. That Mike Pence would be Anderson Cooper's son if Cooper weren't gay. You know, she just wasn't funny. And then people say, oh, you conservatives have no senses of humor. It's like, no, that's not it at all. You people are just hateful haints.
They are. They are. And to tell the telling mark, I think, was that on Sunday or Monday when Mika and Morning Joe were on, and Mika Brzezinski felt bad for Sarah and did not think that that was a good monologue, that it was funny or anything. I thought, oh my goodness, hell has frozen over because I'm agreeing with Mika Brzezinski. But the fact that Mika thought it was bad, that lets you know how bad it really is. And there were a number of lefty pundits that all said it was poorly done and not good at all and did not reflect well on journalists. You think?
But you know, God loves Sarah. Not only did she sit through that abuse, but she strode into the MSNBC party afterward with a regal grin on her face, and she absolutely owned it.
Yeah, I love that. We were talking before we went on air that she was pretty much regal. People were afraid. I heard someone say, oh my goodness, is she going to cry? Is she going to walk out or whatever? She did none of that. She just sat there like the big girl she is, and she looked at her almost imperialistly. She was regal in her manner, and that, you know what, I understand what a hateful little woman you are, and I'm not going to sink to that level. This is just all you can come up with.
And absolutely.
I thought, good for you, Sarah, good for you. Do you know, there are probably millions of us out in the country that said, we wish somebody would heckle or do something and say something like, we love Sarah, and have everybody clap or something. It would have been phenomenal.
Where's Rachel Maddow and all the other lesbians upset about her lesbian joke?
Yeah.
The softball joke.
Oh, my goodness. Oh,
you know,
we
haven't heard anything about that.
Yeah, no. We don't hear from those people when women that are conservative are berated.
But if a conservative woman had made that softball joke.
Yes. They would. If a conservative woman had done that routine about somebody in Obama's administration.
Career would be over.
Career would be over, done, put a stick a fork in her, absolutely. But this gal, I guess she instantly doubled her Twitter followers and everything else. I just thought it was the most abhorrent, most heinous thing I'd ever heard.
Yeah, and I hadn't heard that about her Twitter followers doubling, but that right there, Tammy, tells you exactly what it is that we are fighting. We are in a battle of good versus evil for the heart and soul of America, period.
We are. Absolutely. Absolutely. Now let's shift to the next topic, because we'll probably be talking about this before and after the break, because this is pretty big stuff. Timothy Shea, things are really heating up right now in Syria. We know that that Israel has been systematically taking out military installments in Syria over the last 8 or so months, but some just as recently as April 30 and April 14 of this year, and April 9 of this year. So on April 30, evidently we took out some bases in Aleppo and Hama, and it's because Iran is stepping up shipments of armaments and missiles, et cetera, to Syria, because Syria is right on the northern border of Israel. This is pretty easy to see what's going down here, isn't it, Timothy?
Absolutely. Iran is clearly using Syria as a proxy state to gain a foothold from which to launch an offensive against Israel. If you look at a map, Persia is quite far from Israel. Iran is quite a distance away, although the Israeli Air Force has been practicing bombing runs on a distance that far with in-air refueling, etc. But what Iran is doing is twofold. First, they're using Syria as a proxy state to gain a territorial foothold, but they've also been using Syria to do an end-around of that abysmal Kerry Obama Iran deal, which was never intended to be a restraint on Iran. I want to be very clear about this. John Kerry and Barack Obama did not get duped. You don't call a co-conspirator, you don't call a fellow criminal a dupe. They were collaborators in this. This was all kabuki theater. The agreement was written so that Iran could easily bypass it by working its nuclear program extraterritorially. It only applied to the territory of Iran. And we gave them $1.7 billion in cash, allegedly. But I was told that anywhere from 3 to 6 C-130s would have been necessary to lift the weight of that currency, and that not all planes landed in Tehran. So a lot of money was flowing around.
Wow.
And in the nuclear program, as Prime Minister Netanyahu so amply demonstrated in his brilliant presentation yesterday.
I know. Fantastic.
I mean, he had it soup to nuts. And God love Mossad, you know, one of the best intelligence coups ever for the state of Israel, identifying what looked like a dilapidated warehouse, which was actually a very secure facility, and liberating 1,000 pounds of documents and something like 183 DVDs with documents on them.
Yeah,
which,
amazing.
By the way, all the anti-Zionists, all the anti-Semites, all the Israel haters were out today saying that Israel had dummied these up. The very first thing that Prime Minister Netanyahu did once they secured these documents and returned them to Israel was to provide copies to our intelligence services so that we could validate them.
Right.
And that is what took so long to go public. But we have validated these. These are real documents. These are not documents that Israel has dummied up.
Yes,
Iran cannot get off the hook on this.
Yeah, and Ron Dermer, the Israeli ambassador to the U.S., was on with Brett Baer last night, and it was very interesting. He said, you ask anybody in U.S. intelligence or Israeli intelligence, and they will tell you that this stuff has been verified. It has been vetted. It is the real deal. And I was so amazed by Bibi's presentation and the fact that there were no notes. He knew that stuff. Bibi is a sharp guy. And one of the first, a couple things went through my head, Timothy. One of which was that, oh my goodness, I am so glad we have James Mattis at DOD. I am so thrilled that we now have John Bolton on board. And then add to that, we've got Mike Pompeo, who even though he's at State, and State tends to be kind of the socialist progressive arm of all our government, but we've got Mike Pompeo there, and he is the real guy, too, who, you know his background. We know that
yes.
He knows his foreign intelligence as well as anybody, and he knows his he knows how to be a warrior, as does Mattis. And I'm thinking, okay, it's kind of for such a time as this moment that we've got the best of the best as far as warriors surrounding Donald Trump right now. And the president is so tight with Bibi. I think we could not be in a better position right now with all this stuff happening.
And let's not forget how the change in Saudi Arabia happened first for a reason. Okay. The overthrow, the purge of all the Wahhabis supporting royal family, the corrupt royal family in Saudi Arabia, and the change to now Crown Prince Abdullah from Crown Prince Alawid. So that was very important. We now have El Al flights going to Riyadh for the first time in history. Saudi Arabia recognizes that Iran poses an existential threat to all of the Gulf states, to all of the Sunni states. And they realize that it's much better for Israel and the United States to contain Iran rather than for the Gulf states to do it themselves, because then there would be an internecine war in the Muslim world. So Saudi Arabia is tacitly supporting Israel and the United States in this offensive against Iran.
Wow. Wow. We've got a lot more to talk about on this subject. I will be back with my great guest, Timothy Shea. The Tammy Jackson Show is sponsored, as you would know, by Robar Companies. They are a true custom firearms and firearms finishing shop. They're located in Phoenix, Arizona. You can find them online at robarguns.com. They're known for amazing firearms finishes, and they're known for some of their fantastic custom firearms, such as, I've talked about this before, but lately I've received some feedback from some military personnel who have been testing this rifle, but it's the Robar Polymar 15, which it's called a Polymar 15 because the upper and lower receivers are polymer. So it's lightweight. It's a carbine for a new generation of operators. It's nearly weightless, coming in at around 5 pounds to 5.2 pounds, depending on which variation you get. It's NP3 plated BCG, requires virtually no lubrication. Absolutely amazing. So it's lighter, cleaner, more reliable, and they provide a sub MOA accuracy. The latest feedback I had from a military high-ranking officer who had been just running the heck out of this thing, he was getting sub 0.5 MOA accuracy. Unbelievable stuff. So if you need to give your worn firearm new life, or you want to customize your pistol, or you want to buy a Polymar 15, check out robarguns.com, sponsor of the Tammy Jackson Show.
You're on the 405.
Shop Amazon, support the 405 Media. Click on the banner on top of our homepage. Then you know what to do. The 405 Media is an Amazon associate. That means you get great deals on Amazon.com and support the Talk Alternative at no extra charge. We are the 405media.com. Thank you.
I love Tammy.
I love you back, Kurt, because I'm a caring kind of gal.
The Tammy Jackson Show.
I'm just one conservative gal encouraging you to keep fighting the good fight.
Tammy is what conservative insurgency is about.
Tammy Jackson, the granddaughter of legal immigrants.
In Honduras, they had 60,000 murders per 100,000, or something like that. And I thought, whoa, that is a lot.
Like every other person on the block is dead.
Tammy Jackson, the emerging threat from the West Coast.
Tammy has made herself into a rising radio star.
When we have these mass amounts just suddenly pour into the United States, we have a worse problem than we already have had with assimilation.
The Tammy Jackson Show, Tuesday nights, 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific, only on the 405media.com.
Anything for you, Tammy.
The 405.
This is Mike from the Wrestling Mayhem Show, the show where we get fans and people in the wrestling industry together to talk about pro wrestling, WWE, NXT, WrestleMania, all kinds of fun. It's a podcast party. Check it out. Wrestling Mayhem Show right here on the 405 Media.
Listen to the Wrestling Mayhem Show, now 7 nights a week, 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern, right here on the 405media.com.
You're on the 405.
Let's talk tech. Tech news discussions from the people in the industry right here in Pittsburgh. Online, gadgets, startups, and more. Check it out at awesomecast.net.
AwesomeCast. It's all about tech and it's all about gadgets. It's AwesomeCast, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, on the 405media.com.
You're on the 405.
Welcome back. This is Tammy Jackson. If you're just joining the show, my guest is a regular. He's pundit Timothy Shea. We've been talking about Syria and Iran and, of course, Israel. And I had a little quote from the Israeli Defense Minister Lieberman, and he was talking about Iran and Bibi Netanyahu's report. He said, this is the same Iran that cracks down on freedom of expression on minorities, the same Iran that tried to develop nuclear weapons and enter the nuclear deal for economic benefits. The same Iran is trying to hide its weapons while everyone ignores it. The state of Israel cannot ignore Iran's threats. Iran, whose senior officials promised to wipe out Israel, they are trying to harm us and will have a response. Now, Timothy, we know that the former Iranian president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, wanted to wipe Israel off the map. We know that the supreme leader of Iran, the Ayatollah Khamenei, who succeeded his father, that he wants Israel to be annihilated. And in fact, Khamenei tweeted in 2014, this barbaric wolf-like infant's infanticidal regime of Israel, which spares no crime, has no cure but to be annihilated. So this has been a long-range goal of Iran. And before we get into one other thing, I just wanted to bring up Dennis Prager's video about the Middle East problem, and I'm sure you've seen it. It's so excellent. Anybody watching this show, if you haven't seen it, Google Dennis Prager and the Middle East problem. It's great. He sums it up like this. One side wants the other side dead. Most Palestinians and many Muslims and Arabs do not recognize the right of the Jewish state of Israel to exist. This has been true since 1947, when the United Nations voted to divide the land called Palestine into a Jewish state and an Arab state. The Jews accepted it, but no Arab or Muslim country accepted it. And then he asked the questions, if tomorrow Israel laid down its arms and announced we will fight no more, what would happen? And if the Arab countries around Israel laid down their arms and announced we will fight no more, what would happen? In the first case, there would be immediate destruction of the state of Israel and the mass murder of its Jewish population. In the second case, there would be peace the next day. So this is where we're at, Timothy. It's a big hot spot, and it's getting hotter right now as Iran has all the money in the world, we now know, thanks to this deal that we got into. And it's looking precarious.
Well, it is. And, you know, the Muslims refer to Jerusalem as Al-Quds. They won't even call it by its proper name, right? Jerusalem. And it goes to right back to Obama. The Obama administration tacitly did not recognize the state of Israel by consistently referring to ISIS as ISIL, Islamic State in the Levant. And in the Levant is that entire Fertile Crescent area. So rather than saying in Syria, it said in the Levant. So the Obama administration has a lot of blood on its hands. And the ironic thing is, you know, Tammy, the only Muslims, the only Arabs that have civil rights, that have a chance to vote in democratic elections that are free, fair, and open, the only ones that have free speech, the only ones that are protected, have their individual freedoms protected, are the Arabs living in Israel.
Yes. Absolutely true. It's just amazing. That little state the size of New Jersey They're surrounded by very hostile Muslim nations, although Saudi Arabia is now on our side. And there are a few others that, have been friendly towards Israel and the United States.
Well, but Egypt under al-Sisi after the Muslim Brotherhood was kicked out following Hillary Clinton's Arab Spring.
Yeah, her Arab Spring, which was not very spring-like. Yeah,
but don't forget, Israel. You know, Israel has a biblical claim to everything from the Nile to the Euphrates.
Oh yeah, and all they have now is small compared to what God gave them.
Yeah, all they want is the little area of Canaan that they had. They're not even going Transjordan.
Right.
It's just, you know, whatever the UN has given it plus whatever it took in defending itself, and I keep having to keep emphasize that the West Bank they retook after defending themselves, the Golan Heights they retook after defending themselves, and I don't think they ever should have given the Gaza Strip back. Look at all the death and destruction that has come from the Muslims in the Gaza Strip.
Yes, precisely. It's just pretty amazing now. And if people think that we're being hyperbolic about this, on April 13, the Supreme Leader's representative, so Ayatollah's representative at the Quds Force, Cleric Ali Shiraz, said, "If Israel wants to continue its treacherous existence, it should avoid stupid measures. If they give any excuse to Iran, Tel Aviv and Haifa will be destroyed. Iran can destroy Israel." That was on April 13, Timothy, that he said this. And this was the representative of Khomeini's, Khomeini. And I read that and I think, oh my goodness. So, and Shiraz was making these comments in response to Bibi Netanyahu's speech at the annual Holocaust commemorations, where he criticized the 2015 deal.
Well, you know what that rhetoric reminds me exactly of?
What's that?
Chairman Kim's rhetoric prior to the recent rapprochement. Okay, we cut the... You know, the Trump administration has cut the CIA strings in North Korea. North Korea is no longer a CIA client state. The generals are no longer in charge there. Did you see the relief and the joy and the absolute ebullience of Kim Jong-un shaking President Moon's hand at the DMZ line?
And how it was
they
crazy.
Went back and forth over the line. He is a man. The weight of the world has been lifted from Kim Jong-un's shoulders because he is no longer being held hostage by his generals who were funded by the CIA. Trump cut those strings. And we're doing the same thing in Iran. How do you think Iran has survived through all of these sanctions? It's been with CIA funding. And the president is cutting those CIA strings in Iran. And the mullahs will not be in charge very long. I think we are going to see a tremendous uprising of the good Persian people of Iran to overthrow this theocratic, totalitarian regime that has absolutely held that country hostage for going on 40 years.
Yes. You think about how the people live. They live in very, very squalid means, and yet the country is spending hundreds of millions on their nuclear program. We've run out of time. I knew this would happen. And once again, Timothy Shea, thank you so much for taking time to be on the show, to talk to me, to talk to everybody, and clue us in on what's going on. Give everybody your Twitter handle.
Yes, it's at TimboTim62, the same on Gab, and you can please like and follow my Facebook page, Patriot Uprising.
Absolutely. Do so. Thanks again. I'll have you on soon, Timothy.
Thanks, Tammy. Take care.
Take care. You're listening to the Tammy Jackson Show on the 405. I'll be back on the other side of the break with the two of them, David and Jill Stoll. The Tammy Jackson Show is brought to you by Camera Security Now. Camera Security Now sells and installs surveillance and access control systems for businesses worldwide. Their turnkey surveillance and access control systems provide an excellent management control tool going far beyond obvious safety and security benefits. They can handle your largest surveillance projects while still providing easy-to-reach personal service. They have upfront pricing on itemized quotes, remote access to your surveillance system with no monthly fees, and same-day virtual site visits. You can rest assured your security needs are in the capable hands. So, for more information, visit CameraSecurityNow.com or call 800-440-1662. CameraSecurityNow.com, sponsor of the Tammy Jackson Show.
You're on the 405.
Shop Amazon, support the 405 Media. Click on the banner on top of our homepage. Then you know what to do. The 405 Media is an Amazon associate. That means you get great deals on Amazon.com and support the Talk Alternative at no extra charge. We are the 405media.com. Thank you.
Whoa, a new digital music player. Thanks, Mom.
Oh, I'm glad you like it, because I can't wait to toss the big stereo. And now that we got your dad that big HD TV he wanted, we can throw out our old TV, too.
Hold up. You can't just throw out electronics.
Really?
They need to be recycled or donated.
And how would we do that?
It's so easy, Mom. Today, recycling electronics is just as easy as buying them. GreenerGadgets.org has all the info. We just enter our zip code to find a certified recycling center nearby. There are thousands of them, and new ones are being added all the time. Some of our local stores are even certified recycling locations.
I like that.
Did you know that some of the stuff in our old electronics could be used to make new products and conserve natural resources?
Well, okay then. Let's gather them up. What was that website again?
GreenerGadgets.org. We just enter our zip code and go.
We are a bold and active voice for the unborn. We are Audio Girl Ministries, saving the lives of babies by helping moms in crisis pregnancies get past the crisis. How? Free ultrasound imaging so the woman can see the life she's carrying, and by supplying her with essential baby items, diapers, clothes, food, crib, car seat, all given with a loving and caring heart. Want to help? Log on to audiogirlministries.com and make a tax-deductible donation. audiogirlministries.com. Thanks.
Welcome back. This is Tammy Jackson. I'm a little over halfway through the show, and now I'm joined by my guests, David and Jill Stoll. Beginning with a single struggling student in 1984, former school teachers David and Jill Stoll began a work which now has them running two companies, a learning center that transforms the lives of bright but struggling students, and a training company that licenses their proprietary business systems to business owners who want to make a big impact on their local communities. Jill developed the clinical systems that dramatically improve or completely correct learning and attention challenges, including dyslexia. David's the business guy. He helps licensees build a profitable, heart-centered business. Together, they're out to change the lives of students and their families across the country. David and Jill, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tammy.
Well, it's great to have you on. This is something I've not delved into something like this before, although I have done shows on education and how our education system in America is failing people. And before we get into the challenges, I'll just give you this little bit of history that I thought is interesting. The country at large, or government, to me, it seems like their answer is to throw money at stuff. And sometimes money helps, but sometimes just throwing money at it doesn't work, because I think of what kids are learning now, and if you look at the level of education they have by the 12th grade, it's quite interesting compared to, for instance, my grandma, who was a business owner. She and grandpa bought real estate. They fixed it up, sold it, leased it. They had other businesses. Very, very interesting. But yet, both of them, Norwegian immigrants, had only an 8th grade education. And yet, back in the day, that 8th grade in education included things like calculus and Latin and amazing reading and writing abilities. It was fantastic. So something has gone awry here, and we've got a lot of kids with a lot of challenges, and somehow the teaching methods aren't getting the job done, and these kids are intrinsically valuable. They deserve the best. I saw a list of the kind of challenges you guys like to tackle. They include dyslexia, auditory processing disorders, learning disabilities, attention deficit, execution function, autism spectrum disorders. It's pretty amazing. And I just want to get into this. There's a bunch of questions that I know that people will want to have answered. First of all, what is the difference between what you both do and what schools and tutoring do?
Well, the biggest difference is that schools have a mandate to teach curriculum. That's what their job is. But what we know is that for whatever reason, about 30% of the population are born and raised with missing some skills that make learning easy. So, and you listed some of them right there. You know, one of them that always surprises me is memory. Memory is actually a skill. Now, I have to make sure we're clear here. We're dealing with people who have average to above average intelligence. So they fall under the general arm, on the general umbrella of learning disabilities. But you're right. You know, they have a very difficult time in school where 70% seem to do okay. Are they learning everything that your grandparents did? I don't think so. But but it's hard to learn if you have trouble reading. It's hard to learn if you have an auditory processing issue. It's hard to learn if you have retained reflexes. It all your attention is going in other directions than the actual learning. So I say all that to say, school's job is to teach curriculum. It's not necessarily to fix the learning skills.
Yes.
We fix the learning skills. That's our, and we don't teach curriculum. We are not subject level tutors.
Okay, that makes perfect sense to me. My dad used to say a number of things to us. Dad was once upon a time a professor at a university, at Syracuse University, and then he went on to be a research scientist. And when he retired from that, he was actually a pastor. But he was great at tutoring my brothers and I. And we learned differently. My brothers are the math and science geeks, and I'm on the writing and artsy side of things, although I was a math minor. But it was very interesting how Dad was so good at figuring out how each of us would learn. But there were some big differences. I was an early reader. You know, at just a couple, 3 years, I could read proficiently. And my brothers, who are very, very smart, it took them years after that, and it took them quite a while to really love reading. So it made me understand that the three of us, who weren't stupid, but we definitely learned at different rates and in different ways. And the fact that you, David, and you, Jill, figured out through, I imagine, encountering a difficult student, that difficult in that he or she could not learn the way that they wanted to, that you figured all this out. And I think it's pretty interesting. Why are so many students failing?
You know, that's a really complex question, because there are lots and lots of contributing factors. But in terms of the population of students that we really target, which are students who are struggling in school, so maybe they're diagnosed with a learning disability or dyslexia or attention deficit, or maybe they're not, but they're spending hours and hours and hours doing homework every night and just, you know, studying really hard and then getting poor grades. I mean, so it's that population, but these are smart kids. And so, you know, the key thing that we've identified is that there are all kinds of underlying skills that have to be in place in order to learn to read easily or in order to be able to work comfortably and efficiently with school subjects. And so, as David said, research tells us about 30% of the population has some degree of difficulty with some of these underlying skills. So that's going to make it more difficult for them. And no one's really addressing those underlying skills. At school and traditional tutoring, they get lots of help and support with the academics, you know, to keep their head above water, but nobody's really addressing the problem that's causing them to have trouble with the academics.
Wow. Wow. Well, it'd be as if somebody wasn't taken to an ophthalmologist and they had something wrong with their eyes and weren't seeing properly, nobody would say anything about their intelligence. They would say, for crying out loud, get the kids some glasses or something. So exactly. This is a comparable thing where they've got something that's limiting their ability to learn at the same rate as some other people, some other students, and you guys figure this stuff out. You know, a little anecdote, I have a cousin that's my age, and she's done really well in her professional life, but it was very interesting. She always had a tough time in school and had to work real hard to get even B's, even though extremely smart and outgoing, wonderful person. But she found out when she was in college and just finishing up, because math was tremendously hard for her, that she had a subtle form of dyslexia. And once she learned that, and she had a few sessions with somebody that they helped her somewhat, you know, she was at the tail end of her college, but she said what little she did learn really helped her. So she had a daughter that she recognized that in, and they took her to somebody and said, yeah, she has it a little bit too. So they put the daughter on some programs using more computers for all her work. And they did some different things with her, and that daughter just blossomed and got straight A's. And it's interesting. So it has nothing to do, I need to stress this, that these students can be very, very intelligent and yet have some issues that are holding them back. And you all seem to be able to get to the core of those issues so that they can get those resolved. So then you free them up to learn. All these labels that we're talking about, the ADHD, dyslexia, learning disabilities, autism, Asperger, what in the world are those, Jill and David Stoll? And what do they mean? Are they real?
Well, let me just make some distinctions between some of those. Our specialty, what Jill really developed, was to solve or correct learning and attention challenges, including dyslexia. And what we found was the tools that she developed in order to do that, while it doesn't solve autism or Asperger, it makes a very large degree of difference for them. Okay, so if you're dyslexic, we can make it so that you can compete on an even playing field with no accommodations in school with all your peers. If you are, you know, on the autism spectrum, we're going to make it easier for you in school, but I would never tell a parent we can solve autism. As far as the labels go, I'll let Jill talk about those a little more.
Well, a lot of times people are really reluctant, parents are very reluctant for their child to be labeled. And certainly we don't want to put kids in a box, but sometimes labels help us just to understand their thinking style. Dyslexic students, by definition, have difficulty with reading and typically with spelling and writing, sometimes with speaking as well. But it's a language-based learning disability. But dyslexic students also often are very bright and creative and have all kinds of other talents associated with it. learning disability. Dyslexia is a kind of a learning disability, but those students, again, have average to above average intelligence. We have even gifted students who have learning disabilities, and it just means that, you know, there is something getting in the way of them being able to learn as comfortably and easily as they should, and learn at their potential. And it's those underlying skills that we're talking about.
Let me just tell the story of Isaac, and I think you'll get an idea here. Isaac was failing everything. He was a junior in high school, and he came to the Learning Center for a number of weeks, and then Jill went to the school and to his IEP meeting, where the teachers and psychologists and everybody get together. And Jill said, you know, I think next year Isaac should be filling out college applications. And the psychologist was horrified and said, have you seen his IQ? And she said, I've worked with him. You know, because IQ scores are not always accurate because of some of these skills that people are, you know, they can't take the test well. And but she put together a plan for him. 2 years later, he was in college.
Wow.
And doing well. And now I want you to know, in 34 years, I forget how many, we have thousands of those stories.
Yeah, you know, oh, I'm sure you do.
Kids who came to us, you know, often, sometimes quite young, sometimes we've had people who they hit a ceiling when they went to take the bar exam. You know, but we work with all ages, but our primary clients are school age kids. And just so you know, if you look at 30% of the K through 12 students right now, that's about 15 million kids who have something standing in the way of their being able to function as well as they could up to their full potential.
Wow, that's pretty darn interesting. If you're just joining the show, my guests are David and Jill Stoll. We're talking about learning disabilities, and that is their specialty. They get to the bottom. Jill developed the clinical systems that dramatically improve or completely correct learning and attention challenges, including dyslexia. David is the business guy, but it sounds like he understands it too. They've both been teachers. This is their heartbeat. And by the way, I was going to ask you too, did you meet at Pepperdine University?
Yes, we did.
Well, good for you. That's a good university. You know, I think Pat Boone went there, by the way.
Maybe. I think he started at David Lipscomb College in Nashville.
Uh-huh.
But he was associated, yes.
Yes. Okay, so I know all these odd... Yeah. Odd, quirky facts that don't help you one little bit and have nothing to do with the show, but just thought I'd throw that. Pepperdine's a beautiful university right there on the Pacific. If anybody hasn't seen it yet, visit it or Google it, because it is absolutely gorgeous. It's a good place to meet a future spouse, by the way. I've got friends that have gone there and are going there. So very, very good school. David and Jill have a book. It's titled The Dyslexia Learning and Attention Challenges Solution. And they also have a website, Stoll Learning Center. Both of these are linked on the show page. And I've got a picture of the book there. So if you go to the show page and you click on the title or on the book cover, it will take you to the Amazon page so you can order it, because a lot of people may know somebody, or you might have a child that is suffering from some sort of learning disability and you want help. And this might be a good place to start. Go to their website, look at the book, give the book to someone. So I really want to encourage people to do that. In the remaining minutes that we have, David and Jill, how can we as a nation change the way the children with learning disabilities are diagnosed, helped, and taught?
Boy, there's a loaded question, isn't it? You know, before we started down this road of, you know, we're really looking for 150 people who want to do this work and use the systems that we've developed. Before we went there, we had a number of very smart, well-resourced people who have gone in to change the schools. And I hate to say this, but they come back bloody and beaten. And I looked at that and I said, okay, but in a nation such as ours, we in a free market economy, we can put together a solution that parents can use. And so that's really been our emphasis, is we're not out to change the schools. We're not out to create government programs. Would it be nice if they were? Well, yes, but in order to change these things, it takes about somewhere between 12 and 24 months, and it's one-on-one, and it's at least 3 hours a week. Now, schools are not trained, first of all, but secondly, they're not funded, and they're not staffed to do that kind of intensive work. So, but they are excellent at supporting these kids. Now, let me make a distinction here. When we look at somebody with learning challenges, I always say, look, it's like somebody riding a bike and the tires are flat. And in a figurative way, what the school does is they provide an adult to help steady the seat so the kid won't fall. And there are some better tutoring places that will teach kids to better techniques for riding a bike with flat tires. What we do is we take them off the bike and fix the tires. So ultimately, there's no need for someone to steady the seat anymore. And yes, they can pedal and ride just like everybody else.
Well, so, it makes perfect sense. Go ahead.
Well, just trying to have the schools make a U-turn as to how they've looked at it is more challenge than I want to take on at my age. How's that?
Yeah,
but I do want to make an impact. Yeah. You know, my goal is that we're going to change the lives of 750,000 kids, which is only 5% of the market, over the next few years. But we need a lot of partners to do that, which is why we wrote the book.
Oh,
the
good.
Book, the book really lays out what the problem is. It talks about what's being done. It talks about who's responsible. And it talks about the solution that we offer people who really want to do this kind of work. You know, it doesn't have to take you 34 years to be successful at this, because we have figured all that out.
Yes.
So we just want to save people time and start making a big impact on those kids who are, and we talk about kids who are struggling in school. These issues affect the whole family. And I don't mean everybody has it, but a child struggling in school, and of course we talk to these parents every day, it's miserable. And they know their kid's smart, and they know their kids aren't lazy, but they're not functioning, and nobody can really tell them why.
Right.
So we have those answers. I mean, Jill and her brilliance has figured this out.
Well, it sounds like you have, and for everybody listening, I'm speaking with David and Jill Stoll. They wrote the book, The Dyslexia Learning and Attention Challenges Solution. They have Stoll Learning Center. You can find it online. It's linked on the show page. So they own two learning centers and they employ 35 employees, and they deliver 400 to 500 client hours of service each and every week, and they support a national network of a dozen centers that you've trained. That's tremendous. And David and Jill, when you talk about a child needing maybe 2 years of work to tackle this so that they can learn on their own, that's 2 years out of a lifetime. That's nothing to give somebody a lifetime of being able to read, to learn, to tackle jobs and careers and do well. That is a tremendous thing to give someone.
Yeah, it really is. We've been in business such a long time that we hear back from, you know, we hear from parents whose kids are now adults, or we hear from the students themselves. And you know, these are bright, talented people, children who would not be able to go on and be as successful as they should be. So you are absolutely right.
Wow. Wow. Well, I hope everybody's enjoyed hearing from you too, as much as I have. And I love kids. I love the idea of these kids learning how to learn. That's what it's all about, that you figure it out and give them that gift of learning, because it really is. And you see, I've seen kids that have had challenges that think they must be stupid. And when it's figured out, you don't have to give them a course on self-esteem. When they start being able to learn and excel, that's its own reward, and they have that self-esteem then that they can do it. And so
absolutely,
what a tremendous gift.
Well, you mentioned the link to Amazon.
Yes.
Can I do one better than that?
Yes.
If people want a free copy, can we send them where they can get a free copy?
Oh yes, please do.
I mean, I always like to make money on sales, but. But we've set up fixlearningskills.com, F-I-X, that's fix as in repair, not like the number six.
Right.
Fixlearningskills.com. Fill in the little form and you can get a free book.
Oh, that's awesome. And you know what I will do? I'll go in and I will add the link to the show page for people. And so perfect. It will be there as well. I think that's fantastic. David and Jill Stahl, what you're doing is tremendous. You're doing God's work. You're helping kids, and that's fantastic. I appreciate what you do, and I thank you for taking the time to be on the show tonight.
Well, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Well, there you have it, another show. It's a wrap, and I want to thank everybody for listening. The Tammy Jackson Show on the 405 will be back next week with more great guests. Until then, this is Tammy Jackson reminding you to wake up. Don't be silent. Let your voice be heard, because you and I have a country to save.
I cut my teeth on the back of an old church pew. I learned to walk in the ways of light and truth. And I was told not to speak till I was spoken to. I heard it preach what I should and I should not do. And the choir sang. I tried to be a good boy, but I ain't a boy no more. That a man just can't ignore. And this world's gonna see what I'm standing for. I've kept my peace, but I can't hold my tongue anymore. You can't buy my silence. You can't steal my voice. You can't keep me quiet.
my voice. You can't keep me quiet. I will bring the noise. Try to beat me down. Tell me to shut my mouth. But there's a time.